everyone. I'm going to read an excerpt from the first chapter of my novel, novel in progress, I should say, which is called Phosphorus. It's set in North India, and it follows the story of three main characters, all of whom are female, urban, and middle class. This particular chapter deals with Wahida, who is an economics lecturer who has been brought into politics by her stepfather for reasons that become clear further in the book. There'll be some unfamiliar names and unfamiliar words in this chapter, but I hope they'll be clear in the context when you hear them, and I'll just run through a few things now. Wahida refers to her stepfather as a Seem when she thinks about him, but when she speaks to him, she calls him Abba, which is a word for father. He calls her Widja, which is her shorter nickname. This chapter takes place in a fictional town called Nalkazim. It's based on a real town in the state of Uttar Pradesh. Uttar Pradesh is a large state in northern India, some of you will know that, with a population exceeding 166 million at last count, which I think was 2001. So each political constituency is very large, complex, and mainly rural. Wahida has been nominated by her party to stand as a candidate for MP in a forthcoming by-election. Her constituency, which will be referred to in this chapter, is called Patharghat. The novel starts on the eve of the millennium, so the action in this chapter is taking place on December 31st, 1999. In the heartland of the country trumpeted as the largest democracy in the world, a cream jeep sped on the rutted tracks between winter fields of potato and resting brown earth, dust billowing in its wake. The occupants of the vehicle, a tough-looking young driver, and his passenger, a slim dark woman dressed in pale blue, sat in silence, contemplating their own worlds and not making the mistake of offering unnecessary conversation. As the jeep turned onto a wide, busy road, their pace slowed, and Wahida caught the impatient sideways moo of the driver's mouth. Her own lips pressed together to hide her amusement. She wondered if he could infer her mood from habitual tics of which she herself was unaware. Just yesterday, on another long, bumpy drive, she'd calculated that she spent more time with this brisk, silent bodyguard driver, Moti, than with anyone else. Now that they were approaching the sizable town of Nalkazim, there was no respite from stalls and shops lining the sides of the road. Bicycles were being honked at by auto rickshaws, who were in turn being beeped at by cars and vans. Wahida noticed that the advertising signs attached to the lampposts had changed again. Even the billboards, which reared up on steel legs behind the stalls, were constantly being repainted. Here was a new one proclaiming, "Treat to eat, chicken shop at the West End Mall." I should say here that shop was spelled S-H-O-P-P-E. She felt her face crunch up. A chicken shop was coming to Nalkazim? It must have arrived already without her being aware of it. What would be next? McDonald's? She tried to tuck in the strands of hair that were blowing across her face in the dust-laden breeze. In the last year, she had become ambivalent about economic development. Fast food restaurants and shopping malls were changing the nature of her hometown. Modernization was considered essential, but exacted its price. A thought which sounded suspiciously like a direct transmission from the mind of her stepfather, Asim. Was his influence now so strong that in addition to learning her political lines from him, she was beginning to look at progress as he did? The jeep halted at a red light, after which it inched forward gradually, a fly caught in the syrup of thick traffic. A movement drew her eye to the right. She looked beyond Moti to see the grizzled owner of a sugarcane juice stall holding up his hand in respectful greeting. She was about to smile delightedly at him. He had known her since she was a child, when they used to stop at the stall for juice. She realized that he was greeting her now with deference for her position, and she brought her right hand up to her forehead in a studied movement, murmuring adab. His smile and wave made the craftsmen working outside the furniture stores turn to look, and some of them raised their hands and called out, "Assalamu alaikum." Wahida bent her forehead forward and brought her hand up to again to greet them collectively. Noticing that two of them had folded their hands into a quiet namaste, she then folded her own hands and called out, "Namaskar." The jeep lurched forward as Murthy saw a space open up ahead, but then slowed abruptly again. She could hear him muttering at the horse-drawn cart which had swung in front of them. As they overtook it, Wahida glimpsed the horse, its eyes covered up by blinkers, its tail flicking, its grey-brown body straining at the weight of the cart loaded with bales of cloth. To her, the horses always seemed terrified, flinching at the clamour around them. For a moment, she felt empathy with this horse and had to resist the urge to bring up her hands to the sides of her eyes in imitation of the poor creature. If she was with Munish, she could have talked about this feeling. If she was with Munish, he would have immediately gone up to buy a pair of horse blinkers so that the two of them could properly experience this limited vision. If she was with Munish, he would have said, "You've read Black Beauty too many times, that's the problem." But at the moment, Munish was not too pleased with her. He'd wanted the two of them to go to Ranikhet in the Kumau Hills, to usher in the first day of the new millennium. He suggested driving there at midnight, but Wahida had dismissed the idea. "Don't come near Nalkazim," she'd insisted. She knew she had sounded ruthless. It was better that than admitting to wishful thinking, to giddy urges to give in to his wild plans. Instead, she was going to have a quiet evening in. After the meeting with Asim, she would go home to her daughter and her mother. She would amuse Hira with tales of childhood festivities, and Ami would interrupt gently to set Hira's manner to rights, if required. Hira must be taught tehzeeb. Asim insisted on an outward show of the old etiquette and speech, especially when women of his household met visitors. Wahida hoped there would be no visitors that evening. Asim had said that he would be out attending a string of celebrations and she was not required. She could stay home and wallow in her sorrows, just as she had allowed herself to do for a few minutes that morning, when she'd awoken and remembered that it was the last day of the 1900s. First, she'd given in to regret at having scotched Manisha's idea of a celebration. Then there was the sadness of not having Farah's company. The sheer bold vivacity of her half-sister never failed to lift Wahida's spirits. And in the past, as Asim's favourite, Farah had been allowed to overturn many of the house rules without storms breaking out. There was also the sorrow of dissolved friendships. Hadn't this evening meant to be celebrated together with Lara, Simi and Nalini? They had not taken into account burgeoning families when they'd hatched their teenage plan, but surely all that could have been accommodated, if any of them had thought to organize it. So absorbed was Wahida in her thoughts that it surprised her to look up and see that they were driving through the tall arch leading into the old quarter of Nalkazim. They passed dilapidated buildings with flaking paint and blackened domes, before the jeep halted in a narrow lane outside a low white building. The black and orange flag of the Sachi Awaz party drooped over the entrance. Wahida picked up her bag from her feet, leapt out with a quick word of thanks, and ran lightly up the stairs to the first floor. She strode hurriedly past the secretaries, past her own office, and the bodyguards lounging outside Asim's door. As usual, she was the only woman in the building. She knocked twice on the door before entering her stepfather's office. "I'm sorry I'm a bit late, Abba." She was slightly out of breath. "The junction at Azadi Gate She stopped mid-sentence as she caught sight of pieces of folded paper in the sandalwood bowl which lay on the coffee table. She blinked, but it wasn't an illusion. The bowl was half filled with neat triangles of white paper. Asim rose from his chair. "Salaam alaikum, Wija, you were saying?" Wahida drew her eyes away from the bowl, apprehension stirring within her. Asim had set the stage for his game of chits. Was this going to be one of those meetings where he enforced his will by means of an invented game? "I was just explaining that I got held up in Patrakat at first," she said. "The meeting with the World Bank researchers went well, and I think funds will be approved for an extension to the main room of the school. They understood why it was necessary to have a separate area for teenage girls, how useful it would be in encouraging the families to continue to send them to school." Asim nodded. "I had to stay for tea with the principal. He wanted me to meet the new teachers and explain my plans to them." Wahida gave a grim laugh. "You should have seen their eyebrows shoot up when I said I intended female literacy in Patrakat to go up to at least 60%. The dismal situation gets them down before they even start striving for the target, but keeping the girls coming to school, even when they're older, is the key. That's what I told them. Girls who are educated will send their daughters to school, especially if the facilities meet their requirements." She could hear herself going into oratory mode on her favourite topic, her hand slicing the air for emphasis. She checked herself, returning to her reasons for being late. The traffic practically came to a stop at Azadi Gate. "I know you said 4:30, but you're here now." Asim gestured to the sofa. "Sit down, Wija. You look all hot and bothered." "I'm not hot." The breeze was cool, just dusty from the drive back up. Her eyes strayed to the bowl again and her brow furrowed. She made an effort to continue speaking as if she was not distracted. "I took the jeep, like you said." "Yes, good move. I already heard the report from the local worker. He said it was another successful day in your constituency." Asim gave a satisfied smile. "Our campaign is going well. Why did you want to see me by myself? Has something come up?" Asim went to the main door of the office to ensure it was shut and locked. Already they could hear stirrings in the outside reception. Visitors had begun to arrive and were being logged in the book before settling down to wait for an audience with him. He then went towards a long freestanding bookcase which blocked the opposite wall. Behind it was a small door which led to the inner sanctum, where his chief aide, Umair, sat all day at a desk with 6 telephones. Asim closed that door softly. He returned to the center of the room and sat down in an armchair opposite her, the utilitarian coffee table between them, the ornate bowl placed on the glass top. In Wahida's memory, it had always been there. On her first visit to her stepfather's office when she was 6, she'd been offered lollipops from that bowl. But now she questioned her recollection. In her later memory, it had always lain empty, apart from those occasions when the ominous white triangles appeared. A small shiver went through her. She saw that the shutters at the window were partly closed, diluting the blaze of the afternoon sun. Asim's office, with its thick walls and tiled floor, remained reasonably cool even in the harsh summer months, the ceiling fan being enough to keep the temperature bearable. But in the unpredictable winter weather, there were times when she found this room too cold. Asim wouldn't hear of using heaters, just as he disdained air conditioning. Wahida pulled her bright blue shawl out of her bag. As she wrapped it around herself, she could hear the telephones ringing in Umair's office and the low buzz of his voice. Her ears became alert, as if she was tuning them to catch what he might be saying, but no words were discernible. Umair was the conduit of the world's gossip to Asim. Wahida realized Asim hadn't spoken since he sat down again. She turned towards him and found his eyes on her, watchful, as if he'd been waiting for a good moment to commence their discussion. "Tomorrow, a new year starts, a new millennium. In the Gregorian calendar, at any rate." He gave one of his fusty sighs, "which is what everyone seems to be following." "Yes, I'm aware of the date, Abba. I was thinking that for you, Wija, it'll be a firecracker year. I guarantee it, an eventful year. Wahida compressed her lips, trying not to smile. This was new, some sweet patter before the bite. Asim gestured towards the sandalwood ball, but you're treading a potholed path. You're not thinking clearly. At such an important time in your life, you should draw a chit for some guidance. Her smile disappeared, although her lips remained tightly closed. Her nostrils flared slightly as she took in a noisy breath. She turned her face away from him to the left, as if surveying the far wall where they hung a row of family photographs in white teak frames. An argument was going to ensue, and she wasn't really prepared for it. She composed herself and met his eyes, but when she spoke, she grasped that she was not fully in control of her emotions. Her voice trembled. I'm not going to pick chits. Asim leaned back into his armchair. The heavy-set face, once deemed handsome by the young Wahida, wore a puzzled expression. There were bluish pouches beneath his eyes, which he hadn't noticed before. Age had caught up with him this year. His hair, which hadn't allowed a single white strand until his mid-50s, was now mostly grey. His brow and nose remained untarnished, strong and stubborn. Still sitting back, he remarked, you don't have a choice. That I know. Why don't you just say what you have to? I can tell you've called me in for a lecture, so go on and give it. If Asim was taken aback by her unusual rudeness, he didn't show it. He flicked at an imaginary speck on his spotless white shirt. I'll give my lecture, Widja, have no fear of that. But then I must ask you to pick a chit. Wahida turned away again, seeking to bring her erupting anger under control. Her eyes went back to the wall on her left, to the row of photographs which she knew well. There was the family cluster. Asim, holding the baby Farah, pride evident in his face. Ami, one arm stretched to keep roughing the frame, and one hand on Samir's shoulder, looking at the camera with a mixture of maternal amusement, apology, and grace. And behind Ami's stretched arm, the 12-year-old Wahida, standing to attention, obediently saying cheese for the photographer, her dimples visible. Obedient Wahida. Her face hadn't changed much in the 24 years since the photo was taken. She hadn't even grown much taller. Then her hair had been in a bob, the ends flicking into the tip of her pointy chin. Now it grew past her shoulders and was usually tied back with a clip or knotted into a bun. Her hair had grown up unruly. Her eyes passed on half-seeing to the next picture, which was of a youthful Asim with his sister and 8 visiting cousins, taken in the big drawing room of the house in Nalkazim. This was a photograph from the late 1950s of the ripening Zafar clan, which would in the future inhabit far-flung corners of the earth as medics and professors and temporary minicab drivers. They would be counted in ethnic minority percentages in their countries of residence. That last the Zafars were used to, even in their home country. Wahida was reminded of how Asim could never be comfortable anywhere but in his own territory. She guessed he knew this about himself, which is why he'd spent his life concentrating his efforts on the accumulation of almost kingly power in Nalkazim. She could feel the expression in her eyes change immediately to unbearably immense love when she looked at the third picture on the wall, one taken by Asim himself. It was a far from perfect photo, but Asim saw the flaws in this print as adding an artistic dimension. Hira was in the foreground in sharp focus. The two figures behind her were blurred, as was their environment of the rose garden. Hira had been captured in full adulatory smile at her grandmother, while in the background her parents, Aftab and Wahida, were washed into light arcs, conjoining the rose bushes and the shadows. Their faces were completely out of focus, although Wahida imagined that she and Aftab had worn indulgent expressions. About a year after that outing to the rose garden, Aftab, the artist, had decamped to the Himachal hills. Wahida had given him her blessing. Aftab was happy in the hills. He was happy to live a solitary life in his cottage, happy to idle about and paint wildflowers. Where she had been pressed into changing her life and in the process had found a vocation. She had unearthed latent ambition. She had become what Aftab did not want to be, a politician. Leaning forward now on the sofa, Wahida unclipped her hair to pull the windblown ends together and snapped the clip shut. She patted down her pale blue chemise. The fabric didn't show the dust it had accumulated during the day, but she could feel grit layered over the natural smoothness of the cotton. Having made her seem wait for a response to his insistence, she felt calmer. She looked straight into his dull grey eyes. Abba, say what you have to. Asim considered a moment. Then he spoke in a flat monotone. You have to stop the affair. Wahida's face tightened. She wasn't ready with a rejoinder, but even if she'd been, she wouldn't have been able to speak. Her throat had constricted. How did he know? She had made every effort at secrecy, excessively so, she had sometimes felt. Yet Asim was looking at her as if he knew what was racing through her mind at that moment. She supposed he would have an inkling of her friendship with Munish. He'd always kept tabs on who her friends were. But how did he know it was more than that? And if he did he also know what it meant to her? So you see, Wija, it's time to seek some guidance, he said, as if she'd replied, as if he was merely picking up the threads of a conversation. She shook her head. I don't want to play this game. It will help you make a decision. You've decided for me. You think I don't know how this works? I'm 36, Abba. I don't pick chits. Thank you.